I'm Darius Larson, and today's session is unutterable groanings, and then how to stay on the diet of prayer, basically. If those of you who weren't here yesterday, the session was called Unutterable Groanings, A Diet of Prayer. And what I'm going to be doing is briefly going through what took an hour yesterday, I'm going to try to do in about 10 minutes today. And then stop for a bit and have discussion on it, because we did not have time for any discussion yesterday. And then move on to almost a semi-free-for-all on how and what way do you have problems staying on the diet of prayer. And let's share helpful hints, ways that we can develop a discipline of prayer that will be hopefully contagious to others. I took the theme on unutterable groanings from the 8th chapter of Romans, in which I quote, "The entire creation has been groaning in one great act of giving birth." And then also, "The Spirit enables us to continue groaning as we wait for adoption." We also then, I put down on the board yesterday, prayer and then raper. And I asked, if you knew what R-A-Y-P-E-R meant. And nobody knew. And the point was that none of us have experienced raper, but we've all experienced prayer. And what we need to do is almost think of prayer as raper, because otherwise we have all these preconceived notions of what prayer is, that we have a hard time really looking at it in any new and different way. And so what I then proceeded to do was giving my definition of raper, which is just a funny way of saying my definition of prayer, based on my experiences. It was unutterable because basically prayer is mystery. And it was a groaning because it's a mystery that comes from deep within myself, some longing, some need, some urge that just comes up. Like I mentioned, Christopher, my son, if you listen closely to him before his wails, hunger wails start, there's a pre-noise that if I don't get the bottle in his mouth at that point, what follows is very utterable. Sure.
Before we go on, could you tell us something about yourself? This is my first session with you, and I'm sort of lost.
Oh, okay. My name is Darius Larson. I'm a campus minister at the University of New Mexico in Albuquerque. And I have struggled with feeling that I pray and realizing that what I was calling prayer was just a sort of talking to myself, giving myself a pep talk, and trying to sort out meaning and purpose in my life based on me. And not really listening, not really waiting, not really embracing God. And so based on that, that's why I've been trying to develop a more healthy diet for myself. And then secondly, last semester in Albuquerque, I offered an individualized prayer program for students, asking them to spend 15 minutes a day in prayer and seeing if they would be willing to do that for a 6-week period and come and visit with me for an hour every other week about their experience. I was expecting about 4 students. I think I got 26 students who showed up. And therefore I was thrust into spending a lot of extra time dealing with them about their own prayer life. And the interesting thing was, at first people came telling me how excited they were to learn more about prayer. And then as we proceeded, at first they basically felt they prayed. They wanted to know more techniques on prayer. But after about the second or third session with them, they were questioning whether or not they actually had ever prayed before. And when they questioned that, that was probably, at least I try to reinforce, that was the first step in prayer, to wonder about what it is that you're doing, in what direction, where are you sending whatever you're sending, what, when you sit there in silence, do you wait for? You know, how do you know if, you know, we all expect lightning bolt experiences, and I've never had a lightning bolt experience. Other people probably have. But anyway, that's briefly some of my background bringing us up to today. I chose the word diet based on, well, a lot of different things. One is, you know, we try to have a healthy diet in order to live a better life. Diet actually means a manner of living, a certain style of life that we choose to live. Diet can also mean, in this sense, how do I consume, how do I digest God? And all of that is a part of the term diet of prayer, then, when I'm using the term diet. And it also speaks to identity. Prayer is basically a way of identifying who I am. And the first thing I put on the board here is, insofar as we are not prayerful, we are in a state of forgetfulness. And the converse of that is that as we are prayerful, we are in a state of remembrance. And I illustrated that by quotes of Plato and before birth, living in a state of remembrance. At birth, you enter the river of forgetfulness, and then through lots of work, some people re-enter their state of remembrance or their state of non-forgetfulness. And a Zen saying, quote, "Show me your original face, the face you had before your parents were born," is what prayer is all about. It's a way of centering on discovering who you are as a created individual. We have difficulty knowing who we are because we all too often wish to become something other than we are. So we have all these external models out there. It's much easier for me to be Charlie Mays than to be Darius Larson. Because there's a model out there. I can observe him, how he does Bible studies, I can take notes, I can listen to his tapes, and I can become somewhat Charlie. But there's no model for me. I'm the only person like me in this whole world. And that's exciting and very scary. And so how can I get in touch with who I am, or that spirit within me that is a God-given entity? Prayer is a way of doing that. And we start this prayerful life, this diet, by entering into silence, not into talking. As we begin, we are willing to enter that silence. We come into contact with nothingness. And that's scary. Here I am, not knowing who I am, and I sit in silence, waiting. That's scary for me. But then you can also move into different directions after you sit in silence and begin to speak. And it's very important when you speak that you know that you're speaking to God, not to yourself, not to this rah-rah pep talk type of thing that I spoke of. And another obstacle to the diet is also that we feel somehow in prayer we should be these pious, proud, important, somehow holier than thou type of person. So I'm going to be a very nice, proper person using these and thous and all these other sorts of things. And I've discovered that prayer, when I pray, I'm not praying in the presence of God, but in God's absence. This second quote up there. That somehow, I think the Bible study here this morning was ended up dealing something with that. That if I am with God, there's no need for me to pray. But because God is absent partially, I need to call God to be true to God's promises. I have to hold God to his word. I have to demand that God show God's face to me. And that's what prayer, much of what prayer is for me. It is therefore out of our godlessness or our God-forsakenness that we pray. And then, briefly, three different forms of prayer. Talked about invocation. God, be present to us. Be your promise for us. Be Emmanuel for us. We long for the God who is absent. We want God to be present for us. All prayer, people say, and at least I do this, starts with an invocation. God, be present for us, for me. Then you move into petitions, and the petitions are making particular that general God be present. How can God be present to me and for me? What are my needs? What are my longings? What are my hopes? What are my wishes? And et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then the third form is intercession, in which I'm not only concerned about where I'm coming from and what my needs are, but what my brothers and sisters' needs are. And if we're really concerned about them, we learn to see their needs. And we develop a spiritual eye for seeing those needs. And if we pray for those needs, that prayer takes, hopefully, the form of action as well. And then we concluded yesterday by listing five different things that a diet includes in order to live a prayer life without ceasing. Developing prayer is, prayer for me is becoming much more of an attitude of life than words that I say. And that attitude is an attitude of waiting. Talked about being Advent people and the importance of the Advent mystery as I wait expectantly for that God to fulfill the promises that God says God will fulfill, and it seems to never happen, but I trust that it will, so I expectantly wait. The diet includes seeing life in all its fullness and all its disparity. I see without illusions. I see and know that God is here in the midst of pain, in the midst of agony. I better rephrase that. I see that God is not always here in the midst of pain and in the midst of agony. So I pray to God that God will come and that the new kingdom, the new heaven and the new earth will be here. The diet also includes realizing that we are beggars, as Luther said. That our existence should be an existence without defenses or without pretenses. All too often we get into this, boy, it feels nice to sit in this chair, you know, and be so wise. We are all in this together, licking the crumbs off the floor. We are all beggars, hungering for a God who is beyond all of our comprehension. And if we ever forget that, we have to go back to ground zero. Another meaning to ground zero nowadays.
Dave?
Yes?
Before I forget it, when you're talking about rephrasing that,
yeah.
You know, I better rephrase that. What I want to say is that God is not here in the midst of the agony and the kind of... Is it not true, and I'm thinking here of one of Luther's explanations in the Lord's Prayer, is it not true that those could both be true simultaneously? That God can be here, but not here for me. And what I'm really praying for is to connect me up so that I can experience the presence here somehow.
Good point, good point. In fact, who's the person who wrote Night and Dawn, a Jewish... anyway, his story, his name will come to me, is that in a concentration camp, this little four-year-old boy was, or five-year-old boy was sentenced to be hung. And well, along with two other people. And as they were hung, the two other people died right away. Their body weight was sufficient enough to snap their necks. This little kid struggled because he was so light that he would not, his weight could not snap his neck. Everybody in the concentration camp was supposed to walk by the gallows and observe this. And when somebody said, turned to this author and said, "Where is your God here in this place?" He responded, "He is there struggling with that child." God is absent, but God is present. Christ struggles because of the Christ's death, all that. We can identify, we do have a God who knows what pain is, knows what suffering is. And so, yes, that's very much the same. He was in he was at St. Olaf a few years back. Huh? No. What? No. He'll come to me. He'll come to me. Gates of the Forest is another book that he wrote. Oh, well. Forget it. The fourth is the diet has to include embracing. Without embracing the world in all of its wholeness, in all of its entirety, it's very difficult to live this diet. We need to be in solidarity with all that there is, with all the pain, with all the suffering, with all the joy. And then the fifth and final thing is, it includes praying. I am amazed at how many people read books about prayer, talk about prayer, argue about the meaning of prayer, but never pray. The diet needs to include praying, which doesn't mean, what it means is a very disciplined formal, which may contain a lot of informality, but a regular time set aside for prayer that you pray. You may pray lots of other times, but without that set aside time, I think it's very difficult. And then we did pray at the end, and I want to know if those of you who were there, what your experiences were, where we closed our hands real tightly and we squeezed ever so hard and we meditated upon what it was that we were holding in our hands that we were unwilling to give to God. And then we released our hands ever so slowly, and as you do so, you discover that it's very hard to open those fingers. There's all sorts of resistance. But as you finally do, your hands are in a open receiving posture rather than in a grasping posture. So it is with prayer. So let me stop there and see if there's any comments or questions based on what I just said today or what I said yesterday in relationship to this. That experience meaningful? How many of you were with me yesterday? Okay. What was that experience like for you? I'm just curious.
I was surprised at how difficult it was to open my fingers if I tried to let them open slowly, and how actually stiff they were. But the sensation of getting them open was, you could just feel things, the blood sort of rushing back in.
Okay. Yes.
When you were talking about intercessory prayer and praying, you said we should pray for what our neighbor needed. But I always thought we were to pray instead for what was God's will for the neighbor, which might not be what we would see he would need.
I always thought that too, and I still somewhat think that, but I also think it's very important. What I was talking about was somebody who was terminally ill, I used the example, and wanted to live, and asked and would come to me and ask me to pray that that person would live. I would say to be a true intercessory prayer, I would have to pray the prayer that that person wanted me to pray. and leave it up to God whether or not God will answer that prayer or not is not any of my business. I may have the need, and then it becomes a prayer of my own that I'm afraid, dear God, that this prayer will not be answered. I would like it to be, but if it doesn't, God, help me deal with your absence in this situation, or your feeling absent in this situation is probably a better way of saying it. But that's my need. That person's need is different. Any other comments?
I think for myself, I used to get awfully hung up on God's will thing, you know, and wondering why he kept his face so turned away and why I was never really sure what his will was and what it wasn't. And finally here at Holden one time, this pastor said, I fall in love with the woman, I select the woman I want to marry, and then I ask God to bless the union. Which is kind of a different approach from saying, is this God's will that I marry this woman,
etc. Seminary professor friend of mine has up on his above his desk, prayer does not replace common sense. I think that's a good thing to know, that we don't always pray for, you know, dear God, I'm wondering if I should go to the bathroom today. You know, there are some obvious things that God has given us a mind and a spirit to do some things and to think some things out.
That would come within a point of view that came to me out of the Catholic Church, and that is a thought of prayer as a gift of all we have and all we are, an offering up of all we have and all we are, which would include the common sense, which would include the physiology that makes me go to the toilet, and, you know, I mean, all of that sort of thing. And that was helpful to me when I first started to think through what that all meant, instead of a more mental process.
How about this one statement up here, though, about prayer is based... what is it here? Prayer is rooted not in our sense of God's presence, but in our sense of God's absence. Do you buy that? When I started understanding that, that just made me do holy topsy-turvy, as Francis would call it, or Chesterton would call Francis.
That bothers me a little bit. And I wonder, too, about where we tune into God. You know, it's like your radio dial. You have to get the reception just... the dial exactly right before you have a clear reception without the static. And I wonder if that tuning in process has to be kind of a period of silence or just opening or adoration.
Okay, but the important thing is to first to know that you're not tuned in, that God is absent before the tuning can begin. Right?
And then you mean to begin prayer.
Yeah, because, I mean, if the prayer continues and you're just shouting into the darkness and not having any sense of God's presence at all, which happens many times to me. There's many times where God is totally absent throughout my, you know, my whole prayer life for maybe, you know, maybe several days, weeks. It hasn't gone too much longer than that, where I just don't know what I'm doing and why I'm doing it.
I never thought God was absent. I always thought it was me.
This may be to illustrate a little bit. It's like if you have there's a house, and it's God's house, and God is inside that house. But inside that house, there's a room, and you're inside that room. And God said, I'm knocking at the door. All you have to do is open the door to me. Well, God is present. I mean, you're in God's presence. But it's opening yourself up so that God's in your presence is what prayer is. Prayer is opening up that door and saying, okay, now What I need here is a little bit of expanse. Mm-hmm. I need to stretch out into God rather than having God stretch out into you, because you're already there. It's not like God's absent. It's not like you're absent from God. God's always with you. It's
whether you realize it or not.
Yeah, whether you're opening up your door.
I've always felt that way too. Yeah.
But how do you? The point I think I'm trying to make is, how do I feel that God is present but not with me? I mean, that's what you're saying by that. That God is present but not with me. I'm saying that God is absent from my. I don't feel God with me, and that's what causes me to pray. If I felt God was with me, I would have no need for prayer, because God would be there. But the second point is, I think we come back together. That whoever is in or out, you know, we need to get together. You know, that, I think that's probably one of the important points. But to say that God is present, and then I never talk with God.
But isn't that the humanness that keeps us away from Him? There are times when I have a real need for prayer, and I try to do everything I can to become in an attitude of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something in my human frailty that cannot reach God. But I never have felt that He was any place except looking after me, and eventually I would have that ability to reach Him again.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always felt it was a lack of in me, not in the fact that God was not present. My ability to completely get away from all my humanness, I guess,
mm-hmm.
and reach Him.
Do you have a comment in relationship to this?
Yeah, in my experience, there are two different things that happen, and I'm not quite sure how they relate, but when good things happen, when there is something that is so awesomely good, I'm in the presence of a person who is really speaking to my condition, or I'm on top of the mountaintop, and you know, and I'm looking at this great valley, which just stirs my soul, or I'm listening to Louise play the piano, or a baby has been born to me, and it's healthy and sound, and at that point, I don't have to grope around. God just smacks me in the face with His goodness. And the thing that just spontaneously wells up is, oh, God, I mean, this is something else. So that at that point, I don't have to look around for where He is. He has come to me, the praise, the prayer, you know, is just right there, and there's this connection. The place where I have to do this other thing that I was talking about before, where I am empty, where I don't, you know, I know with my head, I believe He's there because of the good moments. But I can't connect up. That's where the other thing comes in on me, and where the kind of prayer you're talking about, I think, is my experience. That I'm saying, okay, now, this is so miserable and I'm so disconnected, I gotta now get into prayer to see where I can make that connection. But I believe it's already made. I feel that way too.
Okay. Comment back here.
Yeah. My thought was that Him, just as I am without Thy, no, just as I am without.
Without one plea?
Yeah. In the alcoholic diet of alcohol, in his drunkenness, in his throwing up, in his isolation, loneliness, he prays. He's at his worst, and through that prayer, then he becomes sober, and then he is conscious of the 12 steps in the presence of God.
Mm-hmm. But the unutterable groaning is in the utter frustration and helplessness of and the absence of anything that is worthwhile. Now, let me conclude, I guess, by saying that prayer is mystery. Prayer is very individualistic, even though I hate that word. It is very personal, and there's very many different ways of approaching God and God approaching us. I'm sharing with you one way that has been helpful to me as I've struggled to become closer to God and to commune with God in a full way. Too often people say, God is absent, how can I pray? That's when you pray, is what I'm saying. When you feel that God is nowhere, like maybe the alcoholic does, that's when you can begin to pray. I'm saying it, let's say, one way. Let me move into just a few techniques, hate that word too, helpful hints on how we can possibly stay on a diet of prayer. Many of these will be very old to you. You will have heard them. Maybe some will be new. And then I want you to share also any that you may have as well. We all need a prayer place. We need a place, I think, that is set aside, that is a special place.